der Digital Insurance Podcast. Seit 2020 die Nummer 1 für Strategie und Innovation in der Versicherungswirtschaft. Und ich bin Jonas Pieler. Als Entscheidungsträger in der Versicherungsbranche hast du mit Personalengpässen und zyklischen Rückständen zu kämpfen. Scali Insurance Operations stellt seit 20 Jahren Experten für alle Versicherungssparten zur Verfügung. Schnell verfügbar und flexibel skalierbar. Jetzt ein Angebot einholen unter www.scali.insure. Today ist die Vertriebs-AI für die Versicherungsbranche. Today dokumentiert deine Beratung, coacht dich und spart dir 5 Stunden Zeit pro Woche. Besuche jetzt www.usetoday.io und teste mit dem Code Jonas Today 2 Monate kostenfrei. Diese Ausgabe ist übrigens gesponsert. Everyone knows make or buy decisions, but in the last few years, a new option has emerged: renting. Why this plays an important role in the ecosystem discussion and why my guests today are part of all this, I am discussing now with Amanda Ingram, Propositions Ecosystem and Alliances Manager at Sapiens, and Oliver Verneyer, CEO of Imburse. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Let's talk about yourself just a minute. Could you briefly introduce yourselves and the company, maybe starting with Amanda and then Oliver?
Sure. So I'm Amanda Ingram. I'm the Propositions Ecosystem Alliances Manager at Sapiens. And Sapiens is a global insurance software vendor. We're based and headquartered in Israel, but we have global locations across all of our regions. And we are approximately around about 600 customers on our insurance platforms. And as I say, we're global. And we're around about $500 million revenue organization. And when we started looking at ecosystems and why we needed ecosystems, we were very much aware that our insurance platforms, whilst we deliver our core competency of, you know, insurance platforms that service policy and claims and billing and all of these good things, we also needed to supplement that with complementary solutions. And we met Imburse, and I was absolutely blown away by what they could do. And we wanted to simplify some of our core competencies within the solutions as well. And the Imburse platform, which streamlines payment processing, was absolutely one of those things that we looked at. And that's where our partnership came from.
This is where Oliver comes in. Who and what is Imburse?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Oliver Verneyer. I'm the CEO of Imburse. We're a Swiss domiciled or headquartered company with offices in London and in Lisbon as well. And our focus really is to help companies connect to the payments world, really take care of that part of the business, all the complexities that that brings. And we really are dedicated to the insurance sector and work very closely with partners such as Sapiens as well as insurers to enable them, right? Really make those leap into the future in terms of capabilities and coverage.
So Amanda, you have started already talking a little bit about your guys' partnership. Amanda, could you maybe elaborate a little bit about on how this started and kind of what triggered the search for partners like Imburse?
Yeah, very much so. Part of my role really within the ecosystem arena is to ensure that we are delivering value to our core customers. Our customers are all insurance carriers or insurance vendors, if you prefer. As I say, they're headquartered and work across the globe. But one of the main elements of any ecosystem is to provide value to the end customer as well. So our insurers...
Yes. Person being insured, right?
That's correct. That is correct. And not just a person, but organizations that have been insured as well. So we do both personal lines and commercial lines. And that's very important that our insurers have capabilities that aren't necessarily what I would call core insurance competency. So whilst we need to support underwriting and claims and billing and, you know, document production and, you know, integration with email systems and all of these core things that you need to do in order to service a customer, whether that's a commercial customer or a personalized customer, there are other capabilities that we have to provide that support that insurance value chain, if you like.
Right.
And one of those things is absolutely the payments area and, you know, the collection and disbursement of payments, both inbound and outbound.
Maybe if to explain a little bit to the audience that what you guys are providing is kind of sort of the core operating software that every insurance company needs and please correct me where I'm wrong, but this is sort of the system that holds all the contracts, all the person that being insured, all the companies that being insured, and then kind of orchestrates all everything around it, right? Is this about right?
You're 100% correct. Yeah, so, you know, obviously any core insurance platform has to be able to deliver the complete insurance life cycle. So from the minute that a customer comes to a carrier or an insurer and says, I need insurance, you know, the ability to be able to quote, provide pricing, provide coverage levels, provide accurate documentation. It's a heavy regulated industry, so we have to be able to manage all of those requirements within the insurance platform. But what we don't do, all right, is we don't interact with the banking solutions, for instance, for collection and payments. You know, generally that's managed as part of the insurance value chain, but it's managed through a general ledger system or other processes that they have. And one of the key things with Imburse is they streamline all of that process. And it makes it much easier for us to integrate with one provider that then has all of those integrations and interfaces into the banking solutions and the payment provider solutions that the carrier and the insurer will need to interface with. And historically, we would, within our insurance platform, would have had individual integrations and implementations into each and every one of those services. So by having Imburse in our ecosystem, we're actually streamlining that completely, making it quicker, faster, but giving choice. Choice is really, really important.
Yeah, let's Oliver come in here. So could you explain, Amanda, just explain it briefly, what are you doing? So what is the problem that you have seen and that you are actually solving?
So having sort of been quite involved in the insurance industry, you know, like any large company, you try to pick your battles. Like, what is it that you're good at? What is it that, you know, you want to focus on? What we generally call core competencies. And if you look at the insurance world, that's really underwriting, pricing, understanding the risk, communicating around the risk. But beyond that, everything else becomes quite laborious, right? So this is why they get partners that do core systems. And when you think about insurance at its core, it's a contract to exchange money. Mm-hmm. You basically collect premium and I will pay you a claim if those needs, like those requirements are met. So actually insurance is built on top of a payments proposition. Yet when you work with insurers, payments is not a core competency. Like there's no payment dedicated teams. They don't hire specific payment experience. And the topic of payments is complicated because while you have to on one side try to meet the needs of the customer, customers saying, I want to pay with this, I want to pay like that. And those experiences are often shaped by other services like subscription services, Amazon,
e-commerce,
Netflix,
right?
Exactly.
Like let's just elaborate a little bit because when people are buying stuff online, they have like an endless list of ways to pay stuff, like whatever, Apple, Google Pay, and then you have some sort of PayPal, then you have credit card, direct debit, then you have wire transfer, invoicing, and so forth. And this is sort of what you're talking about. They want to pay the way they're used to, they want to, they prefer to, right?
Yeah, I would shape that slightly different. It's not so much a question of variety, to be honest, right? So I think it's not about saying I want 20 options when I look to pay for my policy, but the situation you find yourself in very much shapes the experience you expect. So if you're with a broker, there's no problem signing a direct debit mandate. It sort of fits that kind of engagement. If you're buying online, you are not signing a direct debit mandate and sending it in. So you expect to pay with credit cards. And when it comes around payouts, just to give you a practical example, if you're claiming a life insurance claim, you probably still want a bank payment because it's going to be like 200, 300,000 euros or pounds. You don't want that into an Amazon vouchers or something. But when you are in travel insurance, I mean, just imagine, you know, you and I, we fly from Berlin to Zurich and, you know, your luggage gets lost. So you claim that. Now, I don't really care. I can go home and I have toothbrush and clothing there. So if I get my money at some point, that's great. You are visiting Zurich, so you need money right now. So the way you need money is different. If they pay it to my bank account, I'm happy. But you need it pushed to credit card real time so you can go spend it. And this is more situational, I would say, as you think about customer journey, rather than variety, as in like I need a list of 20.
Interesting.
And that's like half the story, right? Because as the insurers really want to get closer to the customer, the problem is operations. To be honest, the problem, again, is not choice. The problem is out the back. Now you're trying to onboard all of this. You're trying to cover push-to-card, vouchers, real-time payment rails. Then it increases the number of providers you have to connect to in the market. And that's the biggest headache for insurers, is how do I do this with the finance people I have in my finance process, with IT people I have, with all the other projects they have? Where do I fit that in? And that's really with me.
When you're going internationally, Europe, is just sort of the easy example. If you're going even further than that, it gets even more complicated, because in different countries, in different continents, different schemes of payment are actually used or are existing or even non-existing, right?
Well, exactly. And now just take a very practical example, the United States. It's a single big market. So the payment variety topic is not really such a complexity. Europe, it's already more complicated. Like in Germany, lots of people use PayPal. You go over to Switzerland, nobody uses PayPal, but everybody uses Twint. You go, and then you go to Asia, and each market is completely disconnected. They don't have like a SEPA like in Europe. And when you look at like also like Sapiens that works, you know, has clients all around the world, and clients who use a system who operates in multiple regions, that complexity multiplies very quickly.
I would totally agree with that. I think, you know, where we've got global customers, the carriers, the insurers themselves, they're in multiple regions, they've got multi-currency requirements, they've got multi-country regulatory requirements, they all pay in slightly different ways. If they've got commercial customers as well as personal line customers, you've got the, you know, the requirement to bulk up payments and do, you know, major bank transfers, right, into different currency accounts. All of those things add complexity, which in the insurer's world is not a core competency. You know, in the vendor world, our world, from Sapiens perspective, we have to then, if we were building each and every one of those integrations, that adds a level of complexity to the implementation. It increases timelines to delivery to the insurer, you know, for their solutions when they want to make a change. Another level of complexity again. So, you know, what we're doing here is streamlining that. We're simplifying that complexity by one, having one integration point
right
to a payment provider that then takes on all of that level of complexity, which is their absolute sweet spot, because this is what they do. You know, so what we're trying to do here is ensure that we retain the level that we need within our core applications without bringing in additional levels of complexity.
And the one unknown factor that you don't, because payments is very much associated with e-commerce, right? So people associate like cool payments with how you spend on your subscription and e-commerce. So the one thing to remember is that those companies are not exposed to the regulator. So they can sort of do what they want. It's a bit of a wild west, right? Mm-hmm. Even on data privacy, how do you store customer details?
If you call this Wild West, look at gaming.
No, we don't even want to get into that. But it's exactly that. Like, so you say like, oh, but you know, payments are super easy. You just have one API. Then you'd be like, yeah, good luck with that. Explaining that to the regulator, right?
Right.
And so there's like this sort of like conservative approach that the insurers have still towards payments. So.
Right. So Amanda, let's tie this up with the ecosystem, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the way this kind of shines and everything comes to life is because now you guys taking an ecosystem approach where you're saying, okay, we are the core system, but obviously there are several relevant partners on the outside, and you're making it easy and you're streamlining the integration of partners like Imburse, right?
That's correct. I mean, the ecosystem that I manage, we have quite a large number of partners in there, and they all bring different value propositions to the, you know, the complementary solutions that we're looking for. So whether that's someone like Imburse with payments, or, you know, whether it's fraud services, or, you know, whether it's something even as simple as, you know, an automated document production solution, different carriers, insurers have different needs, different requirements. So my ecosystem is expanding on a daily basis. Picking and choosing the ecosystem partners that you want, it can be challenging because there's quite a lot out there. But again, you know, the focus for me is what value are they bringing to our customers, to our insurers? Are they delivering a quality service across multiple regions, multiple geographies? You know, can they support the carriers in their needs and wants and requirements? And importantly, the insurance world is changing. It's constantly changing. It changes almost on a daily basis. New products are being released. You know, the carriers themselves, they have to be flexible. You know, they've got to adapt to change in a very quick way. So, you know, when we're looking at who we're bringing into the ecosystem, we're very much focused on the value proposition that the ecosystem partner is bringing. But can they adapt to change? You know, that's the important factor, is how quick is it to make those changes? And particularly for the insurer, where they're trying to promote new features to their customers, you know, how quickly can we implement those new features? How quickly can we get something out there to market and, you know, bring value as soon as possible to the end customer?
You're publishing a white paper in the near future, which we will provide a link to in our show notes. What is this about?
So the white paper, and I'll let Oliver answer that initially and then add to that. But I think, you know, the importance of, you know, the build versus buy versus rent scenario is coming through very, very strongly. And, you know, we're focusing really the white paper on those sort of topics.
It's really because we sort of, as Nicholas was alluding to, we sort of focus on the traditional build versus buy. Now,
yeah.
Both of those still infer a sense of ownership. So even if you buy, somebody else did the work, but you tend to take it in-house and then you have to run it. So, you know, somebody did the groundwork for you, but it still maintains this ownership maintenance, whereas rent really introduces what we've gotten too used to in the last couple of months or years around renting, right? So I need somebody actually, it must work, I'll pay you a subscription, but everything around ownership and maintenance and up, that's your problem. So one is exploring that concept. How does that fit into the conservative framework that insurers deal with, like regulator, data? How do you manage personal data? How do you manage payments data? Like it's just not like, oh, I sign up to a subscription and it's all done, right? So you have to take care of these InfoSec and compliance topics. So really, how does that fit into the insurer world? Getting insurers comfortable, like to some extent with that topic. And then also talking about how sort of the dependency on services that you rent can be managed, right? So there's still a fear that if you don't own or have bought that, like, where do you stand? Where do you fit in into the roadmap? Will people care what I need? And so getting insurers comfortable more with renting services. And it's really a piece of work you have to lay the foundations for.
I think it's coming out of the subscription type scenario as mm-hmm. well, because, you know, people have got a lot more comfortable now with, you know, paying a subscription to leverage a service, right? So if we think of software as a service, right, so this is very much where we are today.
Everything as a service is renting, right? Like infrastructure as a service, platform
everything.
As a service.
Yes. You know, so traditionally, carriers, particularly in the insurance market, they wanted to be able to touch and feel their infrastructure. They want to be able to touch and feel their software. And suddenly you take it into a subscription model and you're saying, I can't touch and feel it. Do I still have that same level of control
that I used to have?
And you got to tell me, what does software feel like?
Yeah. Well, that's going to be awkward. No. Even reporting, like these are really bizarre, like insurance-specific topics, but there's this expectation they have to report certain things to regulators and ombudsmen, so if there's a question. So if an insurer talks about renting and the regulator asks them, hey, how are you sure that your customer data doesn't go across the data sovereign borderlines? And if you'd be like, well, I'm renting those guys, so I hope not. Like, there needs to be more, right? So you can't. And these are the things that companies need to get comfortable with. How do you service all those needs and how it fits in there? So the white paper really is the foundation to start having that discussion, getting comfortable with the topics nobody wants to talk about, or the payment world traditionally doesn't have a clue. I mean, how do you help an insurer navigate its enterprise requirements? I mean, do you think the payment world wants to deal with that? No, probably not.
So renting is just, in my view, a different way of outsourcing. And companies have been busy outsourcing all sorts of things, like even core customer experience topics like customer support and these kind of things. This has been outsourcing. Building security is most probably outsourced. So where's the difference between traditional outsourcing, even software development outsourcing, to renting? In my view, there's not much a difference, just a different name. And how do you see that?
I would challenge that. I think it's because of the layers, right? So in the traditional build versus buy, I am buying a solution, which might be an external company, but you buy one thing and that operates. And you, when you buy it, you want to know who's involved and what's involved and how it works, right? And then you can make a decision. Does it meet your requirements? Then you buy it and then you maintain it. So you have full control over that space then. When you get into the rent space, I mean, just the concept here around ecosystems or microservices means that can change over time. So just because you bought something in the beginning doesn't mean it's like that forever. So, for example, as they connect to Sapiens, they will do their assessment around Sapiens, how they do that. Now Amanda builds out the partnerships. Now comes a product around fraud management. Now here comes Imburs with payments. Now, how does that match to maybe what they bought from Sapiens 2 or 3 years ago? And that decisioning framework starts complicating things in their mind and it needs to be addressed in a different level. Now you have a vendor with a sub-vendor, and how does that vendor relate to that vendor?
And that's the complexity of having, you know, the value of an ecosystem is obviously bringing that value out, mm-hmm. bringing those complementary services, you know, enhancing what the insurer can actually do and deliver to their customers. But it adds that level of complexity when you suddenly have a couple of providers in the mix. All right. And then when I'm looking at my ecosystem partners and I'm saying, do you fit into what we do within a Sapiens construct? You know, we are a 24/7/365 support model for all of our carriers. So, you know, it has to be able to support that side of it as well. So we're offering that high-level service and we're saying, you're taking our solution, our core solution, our insurance platform, and we're plugging in all of these additional components. And all of those components have to fit in within that framework as well. So that's an essential for us. You know, so when we're selecting partners coming to our ecosystem, we need to know that we can rely 100% that they are being able to follow that model for us. Because when we're looking at that buy scenario, it has to all be completely streamlined and seamless.
Get it. So what the difference is there are more layers and more moving parts added to this entire sort of system of service being rendered, right? And this is why it's getting more complex.
If I had to give you an analogy, it's like basically how do you get to King's Cross? So the buy decision, the build decision will be awesome. The hardest. You go build a car, right? The buy decision is you go pick a car. So you go, you look at all these different things, eventually right. You decide on a car, be like, that's the car, that's the buy. Now, within that, you will be, I don't know, you buy a BMW. Now, within that, you expect something from BMW, but that BMW, that one's yours, and you drive that. Now, Uber is the rent. Now you buy into the proposition that Uber gives you, but the actual vehicle that shows up on the day can change from time to time. And you might be happy for 10 trips and then they add a car and you look at it and be like, that doesn't really ascribe to my buy into the Uber brand, and sort of give feedback and stuff. So I think that's how you should see it. Like you buy in one, you buy into an overall brand and promise and proposition and make sure that as that ecosystem evolves, whether that still suits your need or not, ideally it gets better over time.
Absolutely.
Versus you bought a car and that's it for the next 4 years, right? And mm-hmm. It is what it is. And
also the question is, what's better, right? I mean, you're saying like better is always in the eye of the perspective of the, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying, yep. But so the question is, what's better? But Amanda, you wanted to say something.
No, I was going to agree with Oliver, and I think you know, yes, the insurance world is getting more complex, but it's also becoming a lot more accessible to people. You know, you've got digital services now. Everybody's online. You can purchase your policies online. You can manage your claims online. Everybody wants 24/7 access to their policy, to their accounts, to their claims. They want immediate answers. And the carriers are doing exactly the same thing now. They're adapting to their consumers' needs and wants. So, you know, suddenly, you know, what we used to classify as traditional household policies or car policies or, you know, travel policies or pet policies or commercial fleet insurance policies, doesn't matter really what the insurance product is. They still want that insurance product to be as flexible as possible. And that's driving a lot of what, you know, decisions carriers are making when it comes to a build versus buy versus rent scenario.
And it's sort of, I think even at a high level, if you look at it, it's something the industry has really been struggling with is people should understand that insurers really do want to do better for their customer,
really,
right?
It's
the problem is not in their will. The problem is their ability to do it. And the industry is used to having to make humongous steps at incredible cost. And that comes from the build, even the buy piece. So they go 15, 17 years with a system. And then they have to spend like $700 million to change it. It's like enormous amounts that makes any kind of such decision hyper political and super complicated from a business case perspective. And I think there's a big shift towards a more ongoing, sustainable, like a model that evolves over time without these massive investments to make big step changes. And I think this is where you see also a very big interest in the insurance industry to look at these rent, like partner up with platforms that evolve naturally over time that don't require these massive steps of like even cultural change in an organization. I mean, you can imagine replacing a big system. Suddenly you go within 6 months to a whole new set of capabilities. You have to train everybody. Suddenly you're awesome. It's tense.
Let me add one thing here. The reason why this system has been there for 17 years and hasn't been touched and now needs to be upgraded for a humongous amount of money is because this sort of ongoing maintenance investment that you always need to have for a piece of software isn't happening or is not happening in the extent it needs to happen. This kind of ties into my second point, which is this new renting implies that things change. And whereas in the past, where you have outsourcing, you are sort of the controlling entity telling the outsourcing provider what to do and how to do it. And if they were changing something, they would be talking to you first, and then they would kind of get the agreement and so on and so forth. So I think the fact that software is changing is something that is not new, but is new for the industry, and because for several reasons I just explained. And this is, I think, the core difference. It's important because software needs to change to be up to date more than a couple of years back. But also, organizations need to adapt to the fact that software is changing. I mean, how often do we come across something that has changed in our phone? And just the other day, my mom came and said, hey, there's this new button down left and it kind of keeps changing and it kind of gives me the most recently used apps and I don't want this. I want my Gmail app in this spot. And this is kind of probably something where users, developers, product owners have decided, hey, this is a great feature to have kind of the most recently used app there, but this kind of confuses people and organizations have to adapt to that.
It's a great example because it's exactly depending on how you function as an individual. So let's take that. I mean, the goal of your mom is to be connected to you, like be able to send you a message, to be able to make a call and maybe use some app functionality. Now, in the build versus buy versus rent scenario, if you take the build, which obviously we're not going to build our own phones, but then you have to have the competency to understand the difference between 3G, 4G, 5G, Wi-Fi, exactly. Because those are different components you need to build. Battery, you have to understand battery life cycle, like the amps that it puts out because of charging. You have to understand PC boards. Obviously, we don't want to do that. Now, if you buy, you have to understand less detail, but still a lot. Am I buying a phone that has 4G or 5G? You don't have to understand the tech itself. Does it have Wi-Fi?
You got to look at the future. What do I need in 5 years?
How long is the battery? But it's, again, it requires a lot of competency to decide. Whereas when you go into the rent scenario, you'd be like, I need a phone that connects me. And if at some point you're just like, the world evolves and goes now to 5G and eventually you have laser technology, you don't want to be caught up with that. Just be like, look, here's a new phone. Like every year you get a new phone that has what it needs. Then you can operate at like a connectivity and your mom can focus on her needs, not understanding the tech world. And this is where it comes back to competency and the level of competency you need to do that. So earlier you spoke about, yeah, but software always evolved. Like we had that, you would have a vendor and, you would check with each other. But the level of competency need to even articulate what you need is much higher in that scenario. So the vendor sits there and be like, what do you want? He's like, well, now the insurer has to articulate exactly what they want for the others to know what to build. And this is, I think, the big differentiator for me is core competency topics. Whereas in the rent world, things evolve and you have stuff without having to understand
technology. I think that's a really, really good point. I would align it to, we've all got cable TV at home or Sky or whatever, right? Same thing. You don't know that Sky's getting updated, right? Until the little message pops up in your box that says, please don't switch off, we're just doing a refresh. But when Sky release a new program, it's choice. It's just choice. It's there. You either watch it or you don't watch it, And I think the insurance world, the software world for insurance carriers is moving to that pick and choose option. So you're saying, right, I've got my infrastructure, that's on the cloud or it's a SaaS model or whatever it might be. But we can then release a microservice that says, here's a new plugin to a payment provider. Here's a new plugin to a fraud provider. Here's a new plugin. And it's literally getting to that plugin stage where you're saying, oh, that's a cool idea. I'm going to plug that in and see how that works, And we're going to go with that for a little piece of time.
I would, in this example of this mainframe system that has been rotten there in the cellar for like, I don't know, last 17 years or so, I would argue that it was convenient to sort of ignore that the world is changing. Because if you don't change your system, your interfaces don't change, your processes don't change. Yeah. But still, unfortunately, the world has changed and it is changing even faster now. And the advantage, I would call it an advantage, the advantage of renting is that the change is forced on you from the outside to a certain degree. And you sort of have to adapt you had to adapt anyways. But it kind of takes away your option to ignore the change. You know what I mean?
And in my previous life, I worked at Swiss Re and I was listening to somebody who was explaining exactly the problem the insurance industry is facing with the topic such as digitalization and new customer journey is the problem that any large company has just before they fail. First, nothing happened and then it happened very quickly. So everybody in the insurance industry has been talking about digitalization and modernization for like 10 years.
Easily
it's coming
10 years,
in the next 2 years and then nothing comes in the next 2 years. So the insurance industry has this weird relationship. Like they know it's coming, but it's not coming now. So do I do something now? But when it comes, it goes so fast, like in the UK with motor insurance household, they really struggle and suddenly you're out. Like you're so far out that it is really disconcerting. And this is a piece that the insurance industry really struggles with, is the speed at which happens. First, nothing for a long time and suddenly everything in like 2 years. And this is not things they can cope with.
I think that is absolutely spot on because, you know, I've recently gone through that exact same process with a carrier in a completely different geographical location. And their comment to me was, we have customers who use their phones for everything. Our insurance platform is doing this, this, and this. And they have one of these traditional legacy 17-year-old systems, right? And they're going, we need to put a digital layer across the top of it. And we went, that's absolutely brilliant. Have you got an idea of what it is that you want to digitalize? What customer journey? Is it the quote-to-buy journey? Is it the claims journey? Is it pure customer service from a customer's perspective? They just want to be able to see the policies, their claims, all of their documentation, being able to download the policy documents on an app on their phone. What is it you're trying to achieve? Because they were trying to bite the full bullet. Mm-hmm. And what we were trying to say is, you need to know where your start point is. What is it you're trying to do? Is you delivering value to the customer, or do you want to be pushing more products out to that customer so they've got the option and you're gamifying that customer a little bit? So it's a struggle with the insurance industry to know what is the focus point, because everything now, insurance now is now agile. Insurance has had to become agile. And it's one of those words that you put in inverted commas, what is agile?
And it's great because it's always like the insurance industry, for all its good intention, is just behind in some of the industries on these topics. So they're getting into Agile as the creative of Agile, saying maybe Agile wasn't such a great idea, like it has its limitations. But it's going to be really interesting.
The thing is, what I find interesting here is we're talking about Rent, we're talking about IT and software in the first place. But in the end, we're talking about change management here. I had a discussion with a CIO of an insurance company in Germany the other day, where we said, hey, change management has been in the past kind of these crazy change projects where you sort of unfreeze, then you change something, and then you freeze again, and then you do this in like 5 years or so. But the new world, and this kind of ties into this kind of renting out things and kind of the change is kind of put on you, is that change management is a process. You got to change less, more often than, as you guys just said, once in a big way.
And we've been conditioned to that a little bit more. Like, I mean, even at the most basic level, people, the phone changes every 9 months and people are up for changing the phone every 9 months, even for small sort of capabilities updates. In apps update multiple times a month, right? Without even knowing exactly what it is.
It's invisible to you.
Yeah,
almost,
it's like
it?
Change has become much easier to deploy. It requires different architecture, but something that used to be major topic for us, I'm changing my phone. I used to buy a Nokia and that was it. Like what I was on, it was on there. And then you only got new stuff when you bought a new phone. And the world around us has changed. So people have gotten much more comfortable with change and not, as you mentioned,
there's
like these big change
it,
programs. Like I remember back in the day, like people used to launch big projects with external providers that then go around training everybody in the organization. These would be huge projects to change.
For our last question for today, what do you guys think, by when will this be normal behavior and by when will everyone have changed?
Ooh,
what do you think? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Is it ongoing forever?
What's that saying? The only constant in life is change. So
yeah.
I think we unfortunately will never get out of it. I think we should actually, my challenge here is people should rather build to be more capable of change rather
like
than
agile?
No, I'm not saying that. I will not comment on that. No, it's just to be comfortable that you are constantly changing and ripping out stuff and putting stuff in. You have to think about that, how you build architecture, how you build solutions to make that more easy and just more widely accepted and not have to bring everybody on board when it happens.
The new metric is speed of change.
It is. It's definitely the new metric. You know, change is never going to go away. Right, it's here, it's a constant, it's always happening. Things are always evolving, and that's right and proper. You know, we can't just stand still, we have to evolve, all right? We've got to be looking at, you know, how we deliver more to people, how we can make things more accessible. You know, you look at the car industry. You know, if you just said to somebody 15 years ago, you're going to be driving a hybrid electric car, they would have turned around and said, you're nuts, you know? But that is the analogy, really. And I think everything that we do, whether we're delivering insurance solutions, things, whether we're delivering new types of cars, electric scooters, you know, whatever it is, things are constantly evolving, and we have to make it easier for people to be able to adapt to those things or adopt those things, if you prefer.
And I was watching somebody talk the other day. It said we as humans are really curious beings, because we will look back and be like, wow, things have changed so much in the last 5 years. And then ask, what's the next 5 years going to look like? Nothing's going to change, right? So, like, what? You just said,
and the but same we with that, know it's going
the
to.
The same with the butterfly effect, right? So people will be like, oh, if I travel back in time and I just make a different step, the whole world will change. And then you ask somebody to make a difference in the future, be like, one person can't make a change, right? It's these, we have these weird relationships to these concepts, and it's hard yards to get comfortable with these concepts. And I think sort of to bring it back to that is this is something that is really important to both Sapiens and Imburse. Mm. Like these are, like, how do we make this acceptable? How do we make this easy? And sort of the combination here allows the three parties to really focus on their core competency. The insurer wants to invest its time, knowledge, and energy into pricing, underwriting, customer topics. Sapiens can take care of all the heavy lifting around the policy side, technology side. We can do the payments. And this is where we really built the cornerstone also of the partnership, is that one, it is additive, right? It brings the stuff and it makes change faster and more understandable and actually easier.
Yeah, and that works, you know, and I think, you know, one of the key things for us is, you know, we deliver, or we would like to think we deliver, you know, what we would consider to be world-class solutions. And those world-class solutions have to be adaptable, you know, because our carriers are changing and their carriers' customers are changing, and their needs and their wants are constantly evolving. And we have to move with the times, definitely.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you, Oliver, for this conversation. It was much fun.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Das war der Digital Insurance Podcast. Folge uns bei LinkedIn und hinterlasse uns eine Bewertung in deiner Podcast-App. Vielen Dank, dein Jonas.